Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. Today I have on the line with me Scott Heppner of IBM. He's the VP of Social Business. Scott, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm as you mentioned, I'm the guy that's responsible here at IBM for rallying the troops around what we see as a very significant transformational force out in the market today, which is the whole notion of social business. There are actually four of us that are focused on, really helping our clients leverage what IBM can offer in what we consider to be four of these big changes that are underway here, one being social business, as I'm responsible for. We also have a big focus on cloud computing, the mobile enterprise, and then big data analytics. And in fact, we kind of consider them to be, really one macro force that is really changing businesses once again as the Internet did 15 years ago or so. And they're just really different facets of one big force: social, mobile, big data, and cloud. And it's kind of hard to separate these because you get involved in one of them and invariably you're going to get involved in the other. But I'm responsible for leading the charge behind social business.
Gotcha. So it sounds it's funny because when we work with clients, in my mind, I always kind of describe it as like Pangea. It's sort of like this big island of things. You know, how do you separate search from social? How do you separate, the marketing side versus the internal collaboration and learning and all of those areas? You know, it's just one big interrelated set of components.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, if you look at the four forces, we're sort of seeing a historic convergence of them. But you look at cloud and mobile and big data analytics, I think those are pretty well understood in the marketplace, what they're all about, what the value is. And now it's about how do you best leverage them to move your business forward and to create better experiences for your client. With social business is probably one of the more, the newer of the four in terms of still solidifying in the marketplace what it's really all about. And when customers talk about social business, they're not always using the term social business. You know, you get into things like the digital enterprise, and it's really about digitizing the business, digitizing how you work with each other, how you engage with your clients. And what I find so fascinating about this whole space is that it's really all about people and people behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
If you kind of think about technology over the years, looking backwards, it's primarily been helping people, be more productive in what they do. It automates tasks like, processing an insurance claim or buying something online. And it's helped people with, quality, right? Deliver higher quality results, whether you're writing a book or you're trying to produce a new product. What's going on now with the technology, if you think about it, it's beginning to amplify the innate characteristics that all human beings share, right? Their ability to, all people want to engage with each other. They want to share their knowledge and experiences. They want to follow what others are doing. They want to tap into other people's expertise, and they want to be more influential. And what all this social technology is doing is amplifying that. And we can talk a little bit later, but that's going to grow into new areas of amplification of the human condition. And since people are part of enterprises and people are consumers, what you're seeing is the sociology and the psychology of how marketplaces work and how workplaces work are fundamentally changing. And in fact, they're fusing together in ways that we haven't really seen before.
Yeah, I think that's, one of the things that I tend to be most fascinated by. It's one of the reasons why in the social media and social business space, the book I always say that everyone should read is Groundswell, because it's the one that I've found most focuses on human behaviors and kind of classifies this shift, not in terms of the technologies, but in terms of the people and how they're, adapting their behaviors to be online. And I think, to your point, once the gatekeepers were removed and anybody could create content, anybody can get involved, and all of these new technologies emerged, the psychology and sociology became vastly more important because we're dealing with so many more people dealing with these technologies.
Absolutely. What's really interesting is that it's becoming a way of life, particularly when you look at the millennial generation.
Oh, yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think today they're around 40 to 45% of the workforce. And obviously those that are 18, I think between 18 and 32 are becoming quickly, a major force in the world of commerce, right? Buying things and all that. And as they become a bigger and bigger part of marketplaces and workplaces, you know, that's really going to drive change because it's just inherent to them on how this all sort of helps them run their lives, right? And again, I think you hit it right on the head, which is, you know, in the end, this is about people and their behaviors, their sentiment, you know, how they do the things they do, whether they're buying stuff or whether they're trying to get their job done. And it's beyond productivity and automation and quality. It's really about, you know, again, just amplifying their innate characteristics, right? What they're trying to get done, how they behave, everything they can do with more impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're familiar with Ted Rubin and you know, some of the work that he's done with, you know, social media and talking about return on relationship. But he's often been quoted as saying that the first social media book was How to Win Friends and Influence People. And it really speaks to this idea that, you know, a lot of what these technologies are accomplishing, if you move away all the other stuff, is that it's helping people to be acknowledged and appreciated for their efforts. And it's unlocking some of that knowledge and some of that wisdom that it has probably been locked away in organizations that don't have that kind of open and connected culture that we're now seeing emerge.
Yeah, and you know, social media, our view of social media, it's really the tip of the iceberg.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, social business runs so much deeper than just social business, and you look at just the average human being out there. You know, clearly, I think we're starting to really see the impact, as you just pointed out, of the ability to quote-unquote socialize, right, to engage with each other, share knowledge, you know, tap into each other's expertise, follow what other people are doing, and all that. And that's becoming pretty well established in the market. But we believe that's going to begin to kind of evolve into another phase here, which is around the cognitive nature of people, the ability to really, you know, understand very complex situations that the bandwidth of the brain just can't do on its own by tapping into, you know, what other people have done. You know, an example of that, I'm just thinking of my son here around NFL fantasy football. You know, what you can do now is you can go out there and you can put your proposed lineup into the system, and then it goes off and analyzes what hundreds of thousands probably of other people have done with similar lineups, then comes back and gives you recommendations based on what all these other people have done, right?
Yep.
And so you're starting to see the cognitive nature of people, the ability to think and understand complex things and make better decisions is starting to kick in. And then what's likely to follow that is the amplification of the sensory capabilities that people have, the ability to hear better, listen, to see, to touch. And I don't think it'll be long from now where you're going to have the ability to touch the fabric on your cell phone in a shopping cart, or you know, you're gonna not only hear the baby crying, but you understand why the baby's crying.
Yeah.
Or not only see a picture, but you understand what it means. And it's because it's tapping into the collective knowledge and history of lots of different similar situations. And so I think we're just at the beginning of this transformation. And, you know, when we talk about social business at IBM, we use the definition of social in the dictionary, right? Meaning that it's all about human behaviors and how they interrelate with each other,
mm-hmm.
not social business as defined by social media.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, social media is the major first step here, right? It creates the roads, if you will, that allow all this communication and sharing to happen. But for a business, it's how do you now leverage the roads that have been built and how do you build around that to get real economic and commercial value out of it? And that's where this gets profoundly interesting for enterprises around the world.
Yeah, so here's what I'm fascinated by, you know, because, you know, obviously I'm in the same field. You know, I have a social business agency. I'm a big believer in it. I study it. I love it. Where I tend to meet some resistance is that the things that I'm thinking about, you know, the internal collaboration I was thinking about in 2008. So when I talk to business leaders now and I'm trying to sell them on this idea of social business and you know, what the promise is of actually getting into this sort of initiative and looking at things from all these different angles, I find that I'm still having these conversations about social media. And we're talking about the sharing of photos and videos and text. And, you know, when I want to talk about things like if you're familiar with any of Jeremiah Aoyang's work in the collaborative economy and some of the other people that have started talking about the next phase of social, you know, sharing goods and services and marketplaces becoming services and that whole – theory. That's 5 years ahead of where a lot of people I'm talking to is. So I'm curious what your experience has been, you know, in directly interacting with business leaders. How do you get this conversation even going with them when we're so inundated and in the thick of it that, you know, we see it very clearly, but they just don't. They're seeing, you know, okay, how do I get more Twitter followers? How do you approach that?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it starts with what's happened with social media. A lot of businesses are looking at it from the perspective of from marketing, right? And how you reach out to customers more effectively, how you build these advocacy networks, how do you do loyalty programs better, so on and so forth. And that's definitely of value. But I think as we go forward here, what I'm learning as we engage with customers is that's really about unlocking the engines of innovation in entirely new ways. And thinking about the engines of innovation, the engines are actually the people. In most businesses, it's the people that are their biggest asset, right, where they invest the most money. And, you know, their success is based on how well their people work, how well they collaborate with each other, and how well they're able to produce the goods and services, and then obviously get them out to the marketplace. But we've sort of narrowed it, you know, down to maybe three core conversations that we're having with clients that I think are very much resonating. And we can go through each one of these if you like. One is about this notion of knowledge, right? And if you think about it, we're kind of evolving into a new type of economic model, you know, the knowledge economy, if you will, mm-hmm. where, you know, people are now creating and sharing knowledge at unprecedented rates. In fact, the number one use of the internet is now social. And we know from the studies that 94% use it to learn, mm-hmm. 78% are using it to share knowledge, and another 49% are using it to engage with experts. So this sort of creates a production line, sort of the new production line for business, if you will, for the knowledge age. And it's all about collective knowledge. How do you tap into not just a few people sitting around innovating based on their expertise, but how do you tap into hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not even more, not only within your organization, right, but more importantly, to open up your organization completely, to bring your clients and your prospects into the whole process of how you innovate, right, how you learn, how you create ideas, how you turn them into new products and services, right? So that's definitely resonating.
Well, let me ask you one question about that real quick, because you know I hear that, and I hear that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people or thousands of people or hundreds of people collaborating and contributing ideas, and I can see the obvious upside of that. You know, if you're tapping your customers and asking them questions, yeah, you can get some great ideas. But is there the possibility that there could be a too many cooks in the kitchen scenario where we begin to see the potential of a backlash against this sort of a thing, where there's too many ideas coming in and maybe, you know, a company tries one of them out, doesn't work, and then, you know, we disqualify the whole idea? Do you see that as something that you would worry about, or that, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's where the art and the science come together of, okay, so given that you're able to tap into all this knowledge that is now freely flowing, and again, we can argue at just unbelievably, exponential rates, right? How do you now tap into it? What kind of processes do you put in place? What is the art and science of being able to best leverage all that? And that is where I think you're seeing this enormous amount of investment in, you know, crowdsourcing, right? Mm-hmm. The studies we've seen show about 50% of businesses to one degree or another are beginning to crowdsource. Mm-hmm. And from a crowdfunding perspective, I think there was some $6 billion that were raised last year. Actually, I should say this year, in 2013.
And that's before around, we have any sort of equity stake that you can buy, you know, crowdsourced or crowdfunded. It's just this sort of Kickstarter model with prizes, and, you know, there's really not too much investment in equity. So that could even grow much more once we get to a point where it's publicly funded style crowdfunding.
Yeah, and, you know, you see these examples all over the place. Star Citizen is a great example of a next generation video game that's coming out on the internet. You know, two of my sons are, you know, they bought these spaceships for $60 a piece. I'm like, what are you, nuts? Because they're not going to come out until the end of 2015. And I go out and check this thing out a little bit and found out there were about 250,000 other people that did the same thing. They raised close to $30 million to help fund the creation of this new video game. At the same time, they're getting all these ideas and all this input on an ongoing basis about what they're building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, IBM, we've been doing what we call innovation jams for a long time. Think of a company our size, 400,000 employees. When you can get 30, 40,000 people to collaborate and submit ideas around a particular subject and then have the process and the methodology to organize them and to prioritize them, do the analytics on it, it starts to give you a much better way to understand what we need to do, right? And, you know, people can vote with points. They sort of have, like, you know, fake money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if there's, like, 10 projects that are available to accomplish some particular objective, people can vote on which ones they think. And then, obviously, the ones that get the most votes start to get the real focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the other businesses that are doing it from the perspective of, you know, testing out their marketing messages or doing gamification to get people more engaged or, you know, creating new products in the open.
Well, a friend of mine, actually my best friend works at Quirky, and they do the crowdsourced product development. And, you know, the community is the ones that that pretty much bubble the top ideas to the surface. And then those products actually get made. And if you think about that 5-10 years ago, would that have even been a model that existed?
No, I mean, I think that's what's so fascinating. You can go back 5 years ago and say, would this really be possible to the degree that you can do it today? And you just didn't have the so-called roads, right? You didn't have the social web, and you just didn't have the ability to tap into all these people in an effective way and to capture the knowledge and to be able to analyze it and to be able to really, you know, sift through it and have some sort of methodology to prioritize it, because all that knowledge wasn't flowing at the same rate. So it really is a new model. And, you know, we came out with, you know, we do these annual sit-down interviews with some 4,000 CXOs around the world. We do it every year. We call it our CXO study.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole theme of this year's study that came out in October was about what we call the customer-activated enterprise, which there's no doubt that the leaders of the business world are looking to open up their enterprises and bring their clients into it. They're looking to flatten their organizations to facilitate better collaboration and knowledge sharing through these social networks. It really is a high priority for businesses to do this. And the technology is to a mature enough level and pervasively adopted where you can start to do this.
Let me ask you a question about that, because I'm fascinated by this idea of the customer-activated social enterprise, mainly because I think it requires leadership that is able to remove its ego, which I think is a huge challenge, at least from my experience and from what I've seen in the business world, is that there's a lot of ego at the top. So how do you get those people to be willing to yield some of that control to the crowd? And then also to yield some of that power that they have at being at that level to flatten the organization. And then the second piece of it that I'm interested by is, do you think that if this trend continues towards the customer-activated enterprise, do you see this as making a profound impact not just in business but across the world in terms of how the economy functions?
Yeah, I mean, yes and yes. I mean, that actually brings us to the third of the three that we've been. So, you know, the first one being this notion of collective knowledge, mm-hmm. right, and how you tap into that. The third one, we'll get to the second one a little bit later, but the third one is sort of this observation that these organizations are becoming highly transparent now, right? They're becoming more porous. The touch points are no longer containable. So if – you know, a traditional organization would have some 20% or 30% or so of its people out engaged in the marketplace, mm-hmm. you know, in the so-called old days, right? Their salespeople, maybe their marketing people, some of their services people. But in large, the majority of people that made up an organization were not actively out in the marketplace, mm-hmm. right? Today, you know, you look at the data out there, and you got, you know, some 65% or so of an organization are actively involved out in the marketplace through the social networks. So they, whether you realize it or not, all businesses are becoming social businesses. It's really a question of how are you going to harness that, because everyone's now on the front lines with your customers. And then internally, it's also becoming a lot more transparent because people can engage with each other. They can share their experiences and knowledges, our knowledge, whether it's on a project or whether it's about what's happening in the business or the marketplace. And just all the barriers are just fundamentally breaking down, where you end up with this highly transparent organization. And you know, our view is that, you know, social kind of represents the future of how a modern enterprise is going to work. It's going to be flattened out. Right, it's going to be a much more collaborative model, where you need to empower people around a new social model, and you have to trust them. Right, it's all about mutual trust now. Within some set of policies, some set of governance, obviously, you have to secure the enterprise and the information, mm-hmm. which is so freely flowing now. But the trick for an enterprise and the leadership of that enterprise going forward is how do you create this new organizational design, this new culture that's based on authenticity, transparency, mutual trust, right? And the other big benefit of all this knowledge that's flowing around now is you can understand individual people much better. So rather than treating people in the marketplace as segments, you can treat them as individuals now because you can understand them as an individual. And within your business, you can treat people as individuals because you understand them better, because a lot of this information and knowledge and their sentiment, their behaviors, their activity, their performance, all that is being sort of recorded, right? You're creating digital footprints of real behavior and sentiment that can help you understand a person and therefore engage with them as an individual, not as a segment.
I just love what you just said, that all businesses are becoming social businesses. It's just, you know, it's just a matter of how well that they do it along the way.
Isn't that true, though, when you think about just by the nature – this brings us all the way back to the beginning of our conversation about the fundamental nature of the human condition, these innate characteristics to engage with each other and the share knowledge and all that stuff. I mean, when people come to work, they do it in their personal life, right? It's kind of like the bring-your-own-device phenomenon, mm-hmm. right? People want to bring – you know, they're wedded to their mobile device. You know, I saw an interesting stat the other day that I think it's 80% of smartphone – users have their phone within arm's length 100% of the time.
Yep, yep. I know right? that I start and to I, get the shakes if mine is more than 15 feet away.
Yeah, I mean that's certainly me. And so it's become a way, right? And I think this notion of socializing through the social web is like that now, right? It's a way that people, you know, operate. When they want to go look something up, they're going to buy something, they're going to go see what other people are saying. People are much more likely to engage with their colleagues at work. And I know as a marketing guy here, one thing that's always been the challenge is tapping into our salespeople's brains and the product developers' brains on what are we doing with these products? How are they being received? What are customers' objections? What do they like about it? That used to be a real challenge. Now you can just tap into the networks and you can, you know, get a first-class understanding of what these people are thinking. And so if you buy into the notion that it is amplifying the human condition, right, people, and people participate in marketplaces and workplaces, right, and this, therefore the sociology and psychology of those are changing, and an enterprise is now part of a digital ecosystem that brings together the marketplace and the workplace, you very quickly get to this thought that, you know something, all businesses are really becoming social businesses, whether they realize it or not, and now becomes a question of how well are you going to harness that to create value out of it, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I could not possibly agree with you more. I think that, you know, you make such a good point there. One of the ways that I often, you know, because many of my conversations wind up revolving around social media and not even the deeper social business, the people that say, oh, maybe we could just, you know, not do this or ignore it, it's already happening. So you can ignore it if you want, but just because you're not listening doesn't mean conversations aren't happening. So why not figure out what the best way to do it, what the best steps are to take, and look at how this stuff fits for you. Where I want to just kind of volley it back over to you and ask you a question about some of the things that you just said was, you know, you're talking about using all of this data and making smarter decisions and tapping into the wisdom of the crowd and looking at those digital footprints, treating people like individuals, and all of that stuff is fascinating and conceptually, theoretically sounds incredible. How does the average everyday business go about finding the tool set and having the budget set aside to get into the tools that are necessary to capture all that data, make sense of that data, look through that data and derive some really smart insights from it? You know, given how much of the business environment are small businesses, I'm wondering how practical it is and how far we are away until that technology is widely available for the small business.
Yeah, well, I think all these capabilities, what's nice about them are they're very incremental based off what people are already doing. It's a sort of evolutionary, you know, journey that people are on. And it doesn't necessarily require a wholesale shift in, you know, throwing things out and starting over again. And what I mean by that is all businesses have processes that people follow, right? They automate the processes either to get something done internally or on how a customer would engage to buy something or to get service or in a loyalty program or whatever. So the first thing you're going to want to do is start to fuse the social capabilities into the actual processes. So, you know, they create irresistible experiences that are, you know, exceptional, that are easy and engaging, that are inherently, you know, collaborative with other people into the processes, because that's how people are going to adopt them. Mm-hmm. And what you end up getting out of this is more humanized processes, simplified processes that are more integrated, because it has the people and what their interaction tendencies are as part of it. Right?
Gotcha. So you're starting with culture, basically. You're starting with culture and process.
Yep. Start with you know, process, right? I'm not necessarily you start with it, but process is one element of it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's about, in the end, it's about evolving how your processes work and how you enable them to be more social, right? The second big piece, which we didn't get into yet, is the whole notion of data, right? Businesses, good businesses, make decisions based on evidence, right, and data and analytics, not based on gut feel. And, you know, there's one thing that, you know, we feel strongly about here at IBM is that, you know, data is becoming that next national resource, if you will, for business, where there's so much data out there that, again, if you're not careful, one, you can get lost in it, right? Attention is a scarcity these days because there's so much data that's flowing around. So you have to figure out how to really cut through it all. But more importantly, if you think about historically, you know, businesses, you know, had a wealth of empirical data like customer records and transactions and customer surveys, things like that, that they can use. Then we've just gone through this sort of phase where businesses are now using instrumented data on the Internet of Things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, businesses can know where you are because of the location of your phone, for example, or how many people go over this bridge at this time of the day, or because everything's becoming instrumented, right? What the social web is now creating is the next major phase of data, of big data, which is all this behavioral and sentimental and activity-based data. And I think you and I can agree that 5 years ago, this data simply did not exist. Because every one of these conversations, all the knowledge sharing that's going on, is creating digital footprints that you can now apply analytics against it to make better decisions, because now you're understanding human behavior and you're understanding sentiment and what people are trying to accomplish, which you couldn't really understand that well from empirical data or instrumented data. So there's a whole new phase of data that's coming available and a new type of social analytics and behavioral science capability that's now there. So in that sense, most businesses have some degree of data that they use. They have analytics. It's a question of evolving that into taking advantage of all this new type of data that's out there, which is essentially the social data, right?
Yeah. Step by step, you know, whatever the next small step is that fixes a business problem and drives value.
Right. And then the third one, obviously, is the one that we were talking about before, which is the whole cultural, you know, how a business operates or how it works kind of thought here. And again, that's an evolutionary journey. There's no magic bullet here. It's an evolution. But I think it starts with recognizing, as we said earlier, that the organization is becoming transparent and people are engaging with each other in entirely new ways. They're sharing knowledge. They're tapping into this data. And in essence, you can't continue to have the same organizational design that's traditionally hierarchical, a little bit more closed. You rely on a small set of experts to make decisions, probably not as data or evidence-based in terms of how those decisions are made. And if it is, it's not really based on behavioral data or sentiment. It's based more on, you know, empirical data. So evolving the organization to be flatter, you know, hierarchical organizations are probably the number one inhibitor to good innovation because you're creating unnecessary barriers to innovation, which mm-hmm. comes from people engaging with each other and sharing their knowledge. So, you know, these organizations got to become flatter, quicker paced in terms of how you do things because you're able to engage with each other quicker. And then that gets you into the whole thing, well, if we're going to flatten it out, we're going to be more transparent, which is happening whether we realize it or not. You got to have the policies and the governance to enable trust and authenticity, and because people can see through all that now.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an evolutionary approach to how your organization works and a cultural kind of thought and how you not only recruit and motivate and retain your workforce, but how you really empower them in this new model. You got the focus on evolving how you use data and analytics to make decisions, right, into this new realm of behavioral and sentimental data that's being created by all this social engagement. And then the third one is, hey, you have unprecedented flows of knowledge out there, right, by people working with each other and sharing ideas and prioritizing ideas and so forth. How do I create new processes that allow us to tap into that?
Yeah.
And that's where you get across all that. You get into really a business process discussion fused with how do you create exceptional experiences that are digital-based and collaborative by nature for your customers and for your employees.
It sounds like you've got this crazy idea that the business world should begin to actually mimic the world around it, smaller, more connected, faster, flatter, more access to information, more connected. That's crazy, but I'm buying it. So,
yeah, I mean, the ROI is quite strong too. And maybe, you know, one of these days we could talk more about what clients are doing and so forth. But, you can just, you know, look at one example after another and it works. And, you know, there's no doubt whether you're looking at it from a commerce angle or a customer support angle or loyalty programs or how you do marketing or, you know, how you recruit your workforce in the first place, you know, how you get more out of them, how you make decisions. I mean, there's so many different entry points here where you can take a look at when you get people working together and sharing, you know, collective knowledge is gold, right? And it's behavioral in nature. I mean, if there's two restaurants and one has 10 people and the other has 100, most people are going
to
go into the one that has 100, right?
Yep,
just
even if they
human nature. But in the business world, you don't always know what other people are thinking and doing and what they would do and what they are in fact doing. Now that's available to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's available by their actions, not by you asking them to fill out a survey.
Yeah, it's the ask versus observe conundrum. You know, in some cases, it just makes more sense to observe because they're already putting it out there, and that's what I think the social enables.
Yeah, there was an article that I saw not too long ago, maybe a month or two ago, that the National Library of Medicine, one of the government agencies in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
they are now doing. You know, they provide what they do is they provide medical information and downloads and information on different, you know, diseases and stuff like that. And they've always had, you know, web downloads and web hits and stuff like that to see what people are using. But what they're doing now is they're applying the social analytics to better understand the conversations that are associated with what they're doing out on this website and understanding their behaviors, their sentiment, what else they're trying to, you know, get access to, what they're, you know, what else they're doing, what their feelings are. And they're able to better understand what these people are trying to accomplish by downloading something or looking at something, and therefore they can better optimize the value of what they're providing, right?
Yep.
It's an example of them tapping into this new type of data.
Well, it's
so you're starting to see these examples all over the place, and I think it's going to really form into a major wave here. And if you build it on a cloud, mobile, sort of big data foundation, you know, which kind of makes it resilient and available on demand. It makes it, you know, anywhere, anytime. And obviously it knows how to, you know, harness all the data that's flowing under the covers here. I think that's really the future of these smarter enterprises, right? Is how do you harness all this new technology to really take a step forward with your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it is all incredibly interesting stuff. And, you know, I'm looking at the clock here and I'm seeing that we're coming close to I know you have a hard stop, and we didn't even get into the six predictions that you had sent over to me. So I'm wondering if you would be willing to come back on and go through some of those with me at another point.
Anytime.
Excellent.
I love talking about this stuff.
Oh my God, me too. I feel like, like I said, I want to be sensitive to your time because I know you got other things going on today, but I feel like we could sit on here and talk for several hours about this stuff. So I really appreciate you coming on to the podcast today. I definitely want to have you back, want to talk about these six predictions. But in the meantime, between now and then, do everyone a favor that's listening and give them a couple ways where they can go and connect with you and be social.
Well, one thing, you can go to our portal, which is ibm.com/socialbusiness, one mm-hmm. word. My Twitter ID is at SL Hebner. So obviously a lot of good conversations that are going on out there. And I look forward to engaging with everybody. And when we go through the predictions next time, I'll provide some more detailed places to go around those predictions.
Yeah. So what I'll do is I'll put your Twitter name in the notes of the show. I'll put that link to the social business portal for IBM. And then you had sent me over some of these predictions. I've looked over them. I think I'm in full agreement with all of them. I'm going to be putting together a blog post about it. And once I put that out, maybe we could schedule that podcast and we'll put that out right after.
That would be perfect.
Excellent. Well, Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was fantastic. I could do this with you every week, I think. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Drop by iTunes, give us a rating, and tell us how much you love us. Have a good day.
Thank you.